You're listening to Awaken with Angus Ford Robertson, exploring humanity's greatest mystery, awakening through awareness. Hello, greetings and welcome. Angus here, season 2, episode 8, and I hope this finds you very well. Now, last week, we got into some very personal territory, and I was extremely grateful to Pete for his telling of some stories, looking at, you know, the things he wished he had learnt back in the day that would have massively, positively impacted the rest of his life. This week, in our penultimate episode of this season with Pete Russell, we continue with a rather poignant and personal episode. And we're looking at the topic of head versus heart. You know, when should we listen to the head? When should we listen to the heart? What are the roles of the head and the heart, and how are they different? These and other subjects come up. And it also goes into some rather personal territory of feelings of shame and how we work with that. And in fact, the issue of caring and what it means to be caring is something that Pete takes us into towards the end of the episode. So put the kettle on, get yourself comfy, and I really hope you enjoy the conversation. So let's just dive straight into it, shall we? Now, okay. There's a couple of questions coming up that have been brewing this week, Pete. And the first one is under the heading of head versus heart. And I'll just give a few more clues to where we're headed with this one. The reason it's been brewing for me, and it comes up a lot in my Tuesday Tribe classes, online classes, is that it's, I think, apparent to most of us that we live in a culture, a society that is incredibly head-driven, very cognitive, very rational. And I suppose the question that keeps coming up, particularly those of us that are interested in more spiritual matters and perhaps Buddhism and yoga and so on and so forth, is where does the heart fit into this? What could it be that we're using the head too much, Pete? Could it be? And where does the heart intelligence fit in? And where's the balance? And I'll stop there.
let's explore that. I think, first of all, you know, what do we mean by head and heart? The terms are bandied around so much, and we just assume we know what we mean by it. Mm-hmm. The way I see the words, I mean, head is what you're saying. You know, we get into our understanding, the cognitive functions. It's reasoning, it's thinking about things, it's understanding. It's about sort of that, we might loosely call it intellectual knowledge. I don't know the word intellectual, but knowledge, you know, thinking, that sort of mm-hmm. thing. Mm-hmm. The heart, the way I think of it, is more about feelings. The heart mm-hmm. is about feelings. And so often I think we confuse feelings with understandings. And so, right. You know, like, I'm feeling angry because I am really pissed off at so-and-so for what he did, and he's a stupid motherfucker, and he shouldn't have done that. And, mm-hmm. you know, if it was me, I'd have handled this differently. That's all head stuff. That's all mm-hmm. story, understanding. The feeling is, what's going on in the body? The feeling is like, oh, I'm feeling really tense. I've got this feeling in my fist, like I want to punch him or whatever. That's the actual feeling. Mm. So, that's the thing I always come back to. The feeling is actually something in the body. That's why we use the word feeling for an emotion, because there's a feeling in the body. And that's where we don't go to in our culture nearly so much. We go to the mind, to understanding, to working things out. What's the solution? What do I need to do? All of that stuff. And going, you know, going to the heart for me is going to the feeling. And the heart, you know, the heart is the center of the body. And in many traditions, it's seen that way. I mean, sometimes the lower chakra as well. But, you know, the heart chakra is really the center of the body, whereas the crown chakra is like the center of the brain, the center of the mind. Mm. So it's about almost like coming out of our thinking mode and tuning into that sense of location we call the heart. And then from there, just tuning into what's actually going on in the body? And I think that's what we're not really educated in that in our culture. Almost zero. If you think about normal schooling, it's all about head. But we're not taught how to actually get in touch with our feelings. And I know for years, you know, I was thinking, oh, you know, I'm not in touch with my feelings. And people talked about not being in touch with my feelings. And I thought, oh, I'm really not in touch with my feelings. And for a long time, I thought it was about labeling them. You know, so if I'm feeling, you know, I'm feeling something, what am I feeling? Is it sad? Is it frustration? You know, I'd be looking for putting a word onto an emotion, what I was feeling. And it was like, it was a big eye opener, well, probably about 25 years ago, now 20 years ago, when I suddenly realized, no, what am I feeling? Forget the words. What I'm feeling is an emptiness in my heart or whatever. And that's when I realized not being in touch with my feelings was not about not being able to label them, but it was about not actually being in touch with the actual feeling.
Right.
And that shifted things for me. So, I mean, that's the way I see it. How does that relate?
So what did it shift? I'm curious. Let me just dive a little deeper into that. That's interesting. So it shifted something, and that shift was, what did that feel like, look like, result in?
It meant I just had a different approach to it. When I was feeling something, I would go to the body much more. And still, you know, I still easily get into the head. It's like, okay, stop. What's actually going on? What are you actually feeling in the body? So for me, it took me out of that head thing, looking to label it or whatever, and coming back to the reality of what's actually going on. And then a lot of things become a lot clearer. Because I think what we do is, because the feelings are often uncomfortable with these sorts of things we're talking about, the feelings are often uncomfortable, we push them away. We don't want to go there. And that again leads us back into the head. So by opening up to them, to what I'm actually feeling, I would get new insights into what's actually going on, what's happening, and realizing, I think I might even talk about this in a previous podcast, but how I was having a difficulty with this guy and I just stopped and got in touch with my feeling and realized it was nothing to do with him. It was something to do with just how I would interact with my father. That had got triggered.
Right.
But it was only by sitting in the feeling that realization came up, and I began to see what was behind it, rather than seeing that he was the stupid whatever.
Go on. I was just going to say, it sounds like acceptance. It sounds like you sort of reached a place of deeper acceptance of, this is just the feeling. It is like this.
Nicely put. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Normally we tend to resist it, unconsciously resist it. Uh-huh. I don't like this. I don't want to get into my sadness because I might start blubbing.
Yeah. Yes.
Don't do that. I don't want to do that. So I resist it. I push it away. But yes, it's exactly the opposite to resistance. It's acceptance. Accepting, this is what's going on. This is the reality right now, whether I like it or not.
And it's intriguing to me hearing, you know, as we talk about this, you and I are fairly experienced with sitting with feelings, and we've worked with that a lot, so we're comfortable with it. But I think it needs to be named that for a lot of people in the early days of their exploration, that's blooming hard to do, to sit with difficult feelings. I remember distinctly in my 20s being told by a very dear therapist, Angus, you have to learn to be with this anxiety. I was like, what? No, you don't understand. That would kill me. That would annihilate me. No, really, you're going to have to learn to just be with it and accept it. And that was a major piece on my sort of healing journey. What you're talking about, this, you almost don't need to label it. I mean, Sumedho goes on about labeling thoughts and feelings and so on. I can see the value of that, but I really hear what you're saying. There is ultimately acceptance or not of this feeling. It is like this.
Yeah, and to say, and it's a feeling, and to be able to be with it. And I think, you know, what you're talking about, that shift for you, the shift for me, I think, you know, for most people, this is the case. It's difficult at first. Mm. Not everybody, because I think some people are brought up, or just their, whatever it is, their makeup, they're very much able to be with their feelings. But I think probably the majority of us, just in the culture we live in, because it doesn't encourage that, it's a hard thing initially. to realize what it means to be in touch with your feelings, or, you know, and that's the heart. You know, what is the heart saying? The heart doesn't speak in words. The heart speaks in sensation and feeling in the body. The heart speaks in the body.
And wisdom and knowing, and I'm going to come on to that in a minute, but I do want to add one other little piece in here, because a lot of the listeners from my first series of the podcast, I did a whole series, Pete, on anxiety and panic attacks and so on, and got a lot of feedback from folk, thankfully finding it useful. But the point I want to make here is, when we surrender to the feeling and we accept it, it's not that we are then in some horrible permanent nightmare of feeling and enduring this sensation. It's really important to name. Once we accept it, paradoxically, it gets easier.
It gets easier, and it's not as bad as we think.
Yeah.
Because it's the resistance that gets in the way. I mean, I had this, actually, it was on a meditation retreat, and I noticed there was sadness there. I you know, feeling it. And again, I didn't want to start blubbing in the middle of a retreat. So I didn't go there, and finally I did, okay, what's here? And it was like, there was just this feeling of sort of a mixture of emptiness and openness, but it was sort of comforting in a way, in a strange way. And it wasn't, you know, like this awful thing that was going to happen. When I got in touch with it, it's like, oh, here you are. Okay. Mm-hmm. I can be with this. I can just sit with this. It's not quite what I expected. The mind was thinking what it's going to be, but it's like, oh, okay. I can just sit with it. And because you're not resisting it anymore, you can just be with it as it is. And as you say, it begins to, I sometimes use the word metabolize. It begins to shift and change and dissolve or reveal other things.
Yeah. Metabolize, and I use the word integrate. We somehow integrate it into our system, don't we?
Yeah. And you see, the thing is, all feelings want to be known. That's what they're there for. They're a message from the body saying, hey, attention, please. Something's not quite right. Please give me your attention. And what we do is say, no, I'm not going to give you my attention because you're rather ugly. I don't like you. I'm not going there. I'm going to go and do my whatever it is.
Yeah. Look, while we're on that, you're intriguing me. You don't have to answer this, but I suppose my next question to myself as much as to you is, you know, what is that feeling that's been most horrendous to go there to feel? And I as you were talking then, I was remembering a couple of points in my life where I've really felt ashamed. Oh my God, I did that, and what will all these people think? Or, you know, and it used to be, shame used to be one of those feelings of just annihilation of the ego almost. Anyway, I'm raising this just as a reveal and for listeners to hear. You know, there are certain feelings that we just feel terrified of allowing. But again, even with shame, I've noticed, I mean, I can think of two particular situations in my adult life where I felt it. Even with shame, when you really sit in the horrendous feeling of it, it moves through you. And there's huge gifts and wisdom to be found in that process of surrender.
Yeah.
Do you concur with any of that?
Oh, 100. Yeah. As soon as you started saying this feeling, what came up for me was shame.
Yeah, yeah.
That's been the hardest one.
Yeah.
Because it's so, so deep. And yeah. And like I could know it. I could feel my whole, whenever I was ashamed, my whole body would sort of this cringe and this tightening up and go in the body. And that's been the hardest one for me, I would say, as well, is to actually open up to what it, again, but what it feels, because the story of shame is, as you say, it's the ego, and it's about being outcast and all of that, which we've touched upon before. Mm. So, yeah, but just, you know, then getting in touch with the feeling. Mm. Yeah. How it is.
Interestingly, on shame, I don't know whether this is something you've looked into, but there are some extraordinary traditions and teachers that map out in a very kinesiologist kind of way the vibration of different emotions, and shame is at the the lowest yeah. vibration. And I was so fascinated to hear that it's only marginally above death. It's like it's sort of death is this frequency here where the body just stops functioning, and shame is just a whisker above it, you know. And then you've got anger and resentment and jealousy and da-da, until you get to pride, which is at a neutral point, and so on and so forth. Yeah. But yeah, it's fascinating to me. Shame is just that.
Yeah, I think probably something we all feel to some extent. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think so? That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure we do. But
I'm guessing. I don't know.
Yeah. I wonder how many of us, maybe you're right, maybe all of us are conscious of that. Or maybe it's only some of us that happen to really go into it and feel it fully.
Well, I also know from my own, you know, childhood, I can see how my parents would in a sense use shame as a way to get me to behave better.
You know? Right.
What will people, you know, I remember my mother saying, "What will people think of you?"
Right. Yes. You know, ouch.
So, yeah. Ouch. So, I could see that maybe I had a stronger inclination to trigger shame because of that.
Right. Yeah. And it's so sad, isn't it? I mean, we're going totally off piece, but I love where you're taking this, because that as a parenting strategy is absolutely disastrous. It will, as Marshall Rosenberg used to say, it may get a short-term compliance. It will never get a long-term evolution or growth or love. It will only limit, it will prune back the being, but so harshly that they then have a scab and a scar and an injury there, you know.
Yes, very. I mean, it seems so innocent in itself.
Yeah.
But if, you know, if it's one thing I'd like to go back and change about my childhood, it would be that.
Yes.
That little thing dropped in here and there.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I'm going to pull us back on track here, much as I'm loving where we're heading, but there's another part of this head and heart that really intrigues me. And this is actually just a very short, true story of something that happened in the therapy room a long time ago, which completely changed, actually, how I worked with some of these issues in the therapy room. I remember being with a lovely client. She was late 20s, early 30s, perhaps just tipping into 30s, about to get married. And on the face of it, all seemed kind of fine and things were progressing and there were wedding plans and so on. And then one day she turned up and she said, I just need to talk to you about, you know, this whole marriage thing. And I said, sure, let's explore. So I'm just not sure if I really want to marry him. I said, okay. And from some bizarre part of my head, I said, well, let's just do a little pros and cons just for the fun of it and explore, you know, why you want to, why you don't. And on the right-hand side of the column, she wrote all the reasons, the positives, the pros. These are handsome and good-looking, rich and great job and his wonderful friend. I mean, it's literally this list as long as your arm. And then on the other side, there was like almost nothing, but a few little things. And I said, okay, so there's a lot on the pros and not much on the cons. So what would you like to do? And she burst out crying, said, I don't want to marry him. I said, what? Wow. Tell me more. And she goes, I can't. And I was welling up with the sincerity and the feeling and the honesty that her heart just spoke through and said, despite all of this head stuff, the logical head stuff, all the reasons why I should love him, cherish him, want to be with him, make a family with him, I don't want to. My heart isn't there.
Yeah.
And I'm sharing this rather poignant and true story because it totally shook me up and woke me up to the fact that, is it not true that the heart knows, it just knows what it knows. It has this deeper wisdom of what's true for us and not true for us. And that it's not the head's job. The head does not have that remit to make decisions. How I see it now, and I'm curious to hand over to you in a moment on this, is that the heart decides, it just knows, it loves what it loves, it doesn't love what it doesn't love, And then the head is there to work out the details, to book the tickets, to make the spreadsheet, to write the words. You know, the head then makes sense of the decision that the heart has decided. Yeah. And so I'm really just putting the question back to you. What does that bring up for you? What are your feelings around that? Do you have any experience of it where maybe you went with head rather than heart, or I don't know. Just let me hand over to you. Right. What does that bring up for you?
Oh, it brings a number of things. The word intuition comes up, first of all. Intuition, which is like teaching from within, inner wisdom. I think we all have a great inner wisdom, intuition, and it gets covered up by the head, by all our thinking. And you're right, I mean, basically what the head is there for is to make sure things go okay. And, you know, it's about planning, deciding, working out how to do it, controlling things is a large part of what the head gets into, or understanding it, but all in service of, you know, keeping me here, going well, safe. The way I see it myself is like there's that deep inner wisdom, which we don't touch into because we're into our thinking mode, but it's there. And the way it comes through is through the heart, through the feeling. And so, you know, in that, I think it's a lovely example you gave, you know, how it came out. Well, she started crying. Mm-hmm. It was the body. It was the body that showed her. And so often we may just feel uneasy. We feel uneasiness in the heart or in the chest or something in the body. So I see it as like an inner wisdom that we then get to know because it's operating at a less conscious level. And the body is responding to our inner wisdom. Mm. And yeah, and then that's how we get in touch with it. Again, it's just slightly different use of the word heart, but yeah, mm-hmm. It's all in the same direction. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I suppose this leads to the final issue on head and heart that feels very important. Certainly, I know for a lot of the folk that work with me, while the body and the heart, wisdom, instinct and intuition and feeling is very important, it is also important to not indulge what I would call egoic feeling. So I'm just really pointing a light now onto the shadow of what we're talking about, that sometimes people will be furiously angry and blah, and actually, curiously, that can while it can be true, it can also be a complete egoic facade, a total indulging of the ego, and then the person stomping about saying, "It's how I feel. I shall be angry and destroy everything." And what? That's not what? No. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. And that's what we fall into. And that's, I think, what we're saying at the beginning. That's like, that's getting caught up in the story. I'm just, you know, of course, I have a right to be angry because of this. That's what I'm feeling. No, what you're feeling is something in the body.
Right.
That's what you're really feeling. You're feeling a tension, a vibration, and wanting to do something, whatever. Your body's wanting to act. Your body is wanting to throttle the guy, whatever it is. That's what you're feeling.
Yes.
What, you know, I'm so fucking angry at this.
Yeah.
Is actually your head coming in.
Yes.
And the ego, and as you say, protecting you. So I think it's really important that we get caught up in. And we think we're expressing our feelings, but we're expressing what is going on, but we're not really being in touch. You know, to me, expressing the feeling would be letting your body shake and vibrate, shake it all out. That would be expressing the feeling more than shouting at the person.
Absolutely. And I noticed an example of that recently where I felt very upset and I felt very upset with a situation that had unfolded in my peer group. And I found myself being angry and a bit shouty on the outside. On the inside, I just felt really tearful. The truth of the matter would have been, wow, I feel really sad and vulnerable with this. But I unfortunately went with the egoic story of I need to do a bit of shouting now and get some power back. Yeah. So it's, you know, I'm really just naming this because I know a lot of folk that listen to these podcasts are very interested in the, what I would call the subtle and fine line that we have to go and walk between honoring feelings or indulging egoic expression of something.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think a lot of that shouting, if you come to, is I want to be heard.
Yeah.
I want to be heard. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I'm going to create a big fuss and tell you how fucking angry I am with you. I want to be heard.
Yeah, totally. Now, you know, okay, look, before we end this, I know we're probably running out of time on this piece, but this does tie in nicely with one last little sentiment, I suppose. There's a book which you and I have mentioned to one another that's been doing the rounds. I think it's been out for some years. It's called The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck by Mark Manson. And it's sold millions of copies. And I have to say that I found it really triggering when I first saw the book. I sort of almost had an inner scream going, that's not the point. and, you know, I can explain what I mean by that. Now, I must, full disclosure here, I have not read the book by any means. I've dipped into it. I've had a little look. But actually, it's not really about the book. It's about the sentiment. And I'm just curious to explore with you this sense in society that, you know, we again, this is related to heart, that we may have lost touch with the heart, got lost in the head, and there's this sort of pervasive sense of I don't care, I just don't care, I'm okay and I don't care, and a detachment. I don't really know what to say more than that, and I almost am struggling to put it into question form, but I think you know where I'm heading, and I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about that.
Okay, all these things are complex.
Of course. Just share with whatever's coming up for you.
Yeah. I'm just
processing it.
What's coming through? It's not about not caring. Mm. I mean, caring again. We're talking about the heart. Caring comes from the heart. Care is to. In fact, the word care comes from the Greek charitas, which is translated as charity, but it's also a word for the heart. It's a Greek word for the heart, charitas.
Right.
To care for another person means to care for you, for your well-being. And so, you know, if you need help, it's to care for you. If you're facing a difficult situation, I might, you know, get into helping you think about it, your worry or whatever, or just, you know, in any interaction, just caring for how you feel, not attacking you or upsetting you. That's caring. And we also, it's about caring for ourselves. But, you know, what is, like, the essence of caring is, what is the most nourishing, helpful thing I can do, say, whatever, either for myself or for anybody else or for the world? Caring is really, really important. It's an expression of the heart, and it comes from recognizing deep down we are all the same. Deep down, we're all, you know, we have so much difference on the surface levels of what we think, what we want, our background. But deep down, we all want to be cared for. We want to be loved. We want to be appreciated. We want to be helped. We don't want to be attacked, etc. So I think, you know, it's not about not caring, not worrying, perhaps. You know, I think there's a lot of things where we get caught up again in our heads. I mean, I know for me, it's like I get caught up in stories about what I would do if so and so were to happen, or if I were to meet the president, what would I say?
Yeah.
Which is like, you know, it's nothing to do with me. So it's not about not giving a fuck so much for me, but it's about recognizing there's a lot of things where worry, trying to solve problems that don't exist, is a waste of time. So why put energy of my attention and thinking into something that's probably never going to happen? If it does, I'll deal with it. That's the distinction for me, is we may spend a lot of time getting caught up in worry about things that are just a waste of time, but that doesn't mean not caring about things.
Well, let me ask you directly then, do you feel, on reflection, do you feel that as a society, we are becoming more or less caring?
That's so hard. I mean, my initial reaction is less caring, but then I think, no, maybe we're becoming more caring. I mean, just in terms of, you know, the world affairs and things, there's so much. I think we numb ourselves down to what's going on. There's so much. I know I do. I mean, there's so much horror in the world and just pain and suffering. I cannot open up to encompass all that. I cannot. Even just one bit of it, if I open up to one little story in the news and what that really means for the people involved and how tragic that is, it's like, it's almost unbearable. How on earth can I possibly contain the world's suffering? So in a way, because we're so open to all so much more information, the caring is sort of shut down in some way.
Well, that was where I was going. Carry on. I've got something to say on that, but carry on.
Right. And the other side of it is, you know, we are on, as a culture, we are on this awakening journey, you know, right. Which I think, you know, for me started, it's been going for the last 50 years, 60 years, where, mm-hmm. you know, we discovered what spirituality is about. The whole culture is exploring this and working on it. And, you know, talk about opening of the heart, we're becoming more open to the heart, what we're talking about, open to our feelings, more open to what care really means, how to nourish other people. Well, I like to say less self-centered, we're beginning to step out of our ego mind. So I think all of that is going on. So in a way, I would say, you know, it depends how you look at the question. I would say both sides are true. You know, there's a shutting down of caring, but also we are learning how to care more and what gets in the way of caring more in our personal relationships or parts of the world we interact with, you know, the animals or whatever we interact with.
Right.
But go on. That's my sort of initial.
No, I love it. And it's so interesting that you said that last piece around almost a numbness. You see, my take on it is, as a headline, would be very similar to yours, that there's a sense that we are, as individuals in society, we're so overstimulated with frankly the horror of global reality, the existential threats, you know, the environmental catastrophes looming, the wars, the genocides, the viruses, all of it. It's pretty bloody terrifying, and the media does a phenomenally scary job of terrifying us on a daily basis. So it does seem apparent to me that through overload, overstimulation, overexposure, the heart is kind of shrinking into a bloody hell. I just got to protect myself and my family almost, and my nearest and dearest. And, oh God, that's not my business. And of course, not everyone's doing that, but there is a sense that somehow we are becoming immune, or there's another word I can't remember, but we're sort of we become invisible to the horrors. We just switch off.
Yeah.
And that does feel like something very interesting, bit scary, but intriguing that's going on in the human heart.
Yeah.
Did you ever come across Llewellyn Vaughan Lee and his teachings? He's a Sufi teacher.
Yes. Many years ago, about 20 years ago, just a little. I sat with him a few times, but to be honest, I can't remember too much about my
right.
time.
Well, that's really curious that you say. The reason I raise his name now is because he said something on this, which I'll share in a moment. Interesting, he also said, you know, I've had my 5 minutes of fame, and that was more than enough. Bye. And he literally kind of exited stage left and just said, I don't want to be a public teacher anymore. He just does his thing his way. Yeah. And hats off to him. You know, that's a choice, and well done him. But on this subject of heart, he kind of echoed what you've just said, which is that we've got to remember there's always two spirals going in opposite directions. While it's getting manifestly better, and we are, many of us are waking up, there's also the descent and the spiral in the opposite direction, and the decay and the chaos and the mayhem. And we have to accept that this is some mysterious part of human experience that there's both directions happening at the same time.
Yeah.
Does that resonate? Is that something you would?
Absolutely. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's interesting. Great. Fantastic, Pete. As always, I love to hear your reflections on these things. We'll wrap it up for there for now, but let's see where we go next. Thanks right. for now.
Okay.
All right, Pete. Take care now. Right.
Thank you. Take care.
So that concludes episode 8. Once again, my huge thanks and appreciation to Pete for his time and generosity in sharing all of these stories and insights with us. Next week is our final episode of this current series with Pete, and it's a cracker. It's a really, really interesting final session to conclude on. As you'll see, the session really focuses initially on the power of now and how it's become the phenomenon that it has become. And that then moves into Pete's relationship with Eckhart and how they came to meet. And then finally, we have a little bit of a dive into the nature of awakening. I hope you'll join me next week. Till then, wishing you well. You've been listening to Awaken with Angus Ford Robertson. To join my Awaken program, please visit angusfordrobertson.com.